say, he wrote for him, I guess, B-E-R, Ruland. She's been good about doing things like that. And you are Warner without an H. I noticed this. Oh, let me just, if I may, give you my card for any future reference. And if I also may ever be of any service to you, I noticed in some, when people give the full title of Dr. von Braun, it's like Professor Dr. Werner Freiherr,
Yes.
Now, is that the title of the Baron? Is that Baron in German?
It's Baron.
Okay.
Yep.
I see. And it doesn't come in the front. It comes in the middle, I mean, between his...
It's really never used in He is, well, his family is from the lower nobility, the Baron or the Lord.
Not a duke or
not count. It's just a supervisor or whatever, a relatively small area.
I see.
For somebody else.
I see. Right, not Ruth, but somebody else told me that, was it Friedrich or Fred, Ruth's late husband was a count. I think, and he outranked. Von Braun used to joke about Ruth's husband outranking him in the aristocratic hierarchy. And for whatever that's worth, which is about zero. So that Freiherr, is that
Freiherr?
Yeah. And I know he stopped. He certainly didn't use that for very long in his life.
Right.
And I think we established you. You came to the U.S. in '47.
Yes.
And you went straight to Bliss, I guess.
Yes.
And lest I fail to do this later, your current position is what?
Chief of analysis. Defensive
pressure. Yeah. Aerodynamicist.
Yes. I have a copy of if it helps you.
Of your resume? Yes, later on, if you would, that would be good. And that is in what lab or directorate if in the I know you're in 4610, aren't you? In 4610, all and the Portsmouth and Bananasville, you know, the French people. The structures and dynamics. And L dynamics, part of them, right, of course. And is that laboratory or
laboratory?
Laboratory, okay, good. Very good. Well, you're setting a good record for tenure out there, aren't you?
Yes.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I am at the Huntsville Times.
Yes.
I started in 57 at the time.
So
almost right out of journalism school. And I'm still enjoying it. Let's see. since you came in 47, that was probably at the direct invitation of Dr. Von Braun, or close to that.
I don't know who. Well, my
former pop toy and
my former boss from the Benjamin was probably the instigator.
Was the instigator. And who was that?
Ludwig Rohl, R-O-T-A.
Oh, yes. Axel's father.
Axel's father.
I know. My wife was in school with Axel at Huntsville High School. Classmates, I think.
Axel's father was my boss in Benjamin.
I see.
And when they got permission to call over some more people, I had to put my name to that.
I see. Mm-hmm. And were you a part of a small second wave?
Yes.
I see. About how many? And you know, I'm asking more things than I'll probably use, but just
get all
a dozen or two.
With me directly, came only one auto power.
Mm-hmm.
But what we call the second wave, I think it was probably 20 people or something like that.
Right.
But not coming at the same time with the same boat.
Exactly.
Coming
exactly. Are there, now as you know, I'm looking for humorous little stories with a point.
Yes.
Or in some cases, otherwise, just interesting little vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes an interesting quote or quip or bon mot.
Yes.
Or something like that. So there's a little variety of anecdotes that I'm interested in. Do you recall anything that might be suitable from the Peenemunde days, or?
Of course.
Okay.
You see,
there was not a lot of laughs maybe then.
Good. Peenemunde, they were up in the same building, which wasn't so long. But there was a little Indian.
Ah, I see.
And it was in public school.
Little higher Indian. Sure. But you were about to recall maybe another story.
No,
when I mentioned Peenemunde.
This fort there is the only dialect
that you're really aware of.
That'll leave you well.
Right, right. Well, this that will definitely be suitable.
I think he was so used to be known on the telephone by others.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know who called me. I assumed it was Bruce Ross.
I've somewhere in my process of interviewing you, someone had told me a similar story, not the same.
Yeah.
I think it may have involved, you know, I have my notes. I think it may have involved Arthur Rudolph. And there, it may have involved an early Saturn test launch, Saturn 1, maybe. And so everything went well. And Dr. Von Braun, out of sight, maybe he was in another part of the building, or I don't know, he called, let's say it's Arthur Rudolph, and said, "Congratulations." And the reply was, "Who is this?"
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Von Braun answered, "Werner." And the reply was, "Werner who?" And then it may have been, "Damn it, Werner Von Braun, the guy who gets you all this money for your fun and games, you know, who runs around all over the country getting you this money for your games." I was going to say,
"Yeah, something about Polanka."
Yeah. Because there was more than one Werner. As we know, several. That is good. Is there an anglicized equivalent to Werner? Of course, I know Walter and
yes.
All of that, but not really. Did you, what were your feelings when you learned that Dr. Von Braun would be moving Washington?
No, what's that to see when he goes to the little Buffalo side port?
Although Everhard was there in command.
But still gave some continuity.
Sure. Did you anticipate that would mean the beginning of the breakup of the team, though?
No.
Not necessarily. Because Everhard was there.
The whole of that was after what's been
going on. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did you get any feedback from those years, either directly or just things that you heard about how Dr. Von Braun was doing at headquarters for those 2 years?
Well, I don't know if that's
several people
see that in support. And I don't know if from one American colleague that this whole thing has been political arrangement. In the sense that I thought he was unavailable.
Mm-hmm.
In Washington, he was accepted to that.
Mm-hmm.
And
where he was.
People who did not, who were tired of being in his shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked that.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to name names, but people have mentioned to me people like George Lowe, and of course James Fletcher didn't turn out to be a big fan of Dr. Von Braun's, perhaps. I don't know. And Abe Silverstein and some of the others maybe got even. But some tell me that Tom Paine was the one who issued the invitation, or the command, I suppose. It was an invitation.
It was an invitation. He couldn't command it.
I see. And there was mutual respect between Paine and Von Braun, it is said, or some people say. But that the problem was, and undoubtedly there were others who were glad to see Von Braun area where he was vulnerable.
Yep.
But that Tom Paine perhaps was not a party to that, although he was the one.
It's possible. I don't know.
But that he soon left.
Yes.
That would have been during the Nixon.
It's only as I heard it.
Well,
the American colleague here, talking with the colleague from Houston, and the Houston fellow expected him. This was arranged for him.
Mm-hmm. In some cases, settle old scores from World War II, if you will,
from there to simply ambitions.
Right.
We want to be the guy that reads the faith.
I was going to say, and many people have suggested they were so many people just envious of him, jealous of him. When NASA needed a great witness to go before Congress to get the money, who'd they call on? Dr. Von Braun.
Yes.
And Bill Pickering told me, Von Braun, and he didn't say this with any ill will or anything, he said Von Braun was the only witness he ever saw in his life Congress, where when he entered the hearing room, the members of the committee came down to the floor, the witness floor, to say hello to him, to shake his hand, to, you know, speak to him, that he had this star quality, and I guess he always shot straight with Congress.
He understood. Technical.
And I guess he could also convey the vision, the overall vision to them, to help fire their imagination, since they're going to have to spend all this tax.
He was on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't seek fame. He wanted to advance.
Did you say Glory Hog?
Glory.
Or Hound?
I said Hound.
Yeah,
Hound,
yeah. That's
the Glory Hog from the stage of God.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called.
I'm sure. And there have been several of those through the years.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And for the administrator, one of the greatest tasks, most difficult tasks, clear of the glory hog.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Because they advise to their glory and not to what
we left. Right. That makes sense. Were you surprised when you heard that Dr. Von Braun would be leaving NASA to join Fairchild?
Not really.
Mm-hmm. Considering that you heard he was frustrated.
Yes.
I've recently written Ed Yule, who was the CEO of Fairchild, and I think a good friend of Dr. Von. It's UHL, Edward Yule. He was the co-inventor of the bazooka, and then he was the chief officer of Fairchild when Dr. Von, and he made an offer to Dr. Von Braun. I understand he's still alive and well, and I've written him for a possible brief interview or see if he had anything to...
His name originally meant Owl.
Owl, is that right? In German?
Yes, in German. UHL is the older form of Owl.
A very wise bird.
Yes.
Well, apparently they were good friends. Very gather Dr. Von Braun enjoyed his years at Fairchild, although he complained once about, or maybe more than once, about having to travel too much.
I don't really know what he did and was still able to do at Fairchild because he had a little.
Yes. Do you think he was, that he knew he was ill when he left NASA? Or?
I have no idea.
Right.
I wouldn't assume he did not know.
75, of course he died in 77. 75 seems to be the first time that it really surfaced, his illness.
But I don't know.
Maria would. And I corresponded with her last year in connection with this Cummings book I'm doing, because the Von Braun went to the Cummings home for dinner, and Dr. Von Braun was a customer of Brown Engineering and Mr. Cummings. And she wrote me a little note saying that she really, other than the official business there, she really didn't have any material to add to my research, so I really, she's somewhat withdrawn, so I haven't even attempted to talk with her about this.
I think she has all to the transport.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, this is nothing new. That's what I'm told. Very private person, and probably and stayed as far away from journalists and authors as she can get, which I can understand. Do you remember any off-the-cuff statement or any memorable remark by Dr. Von Braun when Apollo 11, when the Eagle landed on the surface? You know, I haven't really heard, I haven't read all the biographies of Dr. Von Braun, but I'm not aware of any. I know he made statements afterwards,
yes,
official statements. Exactly. But no off-the-cuff remark or anything.
Right.
Do you, I know you didn't work every day at his elbow and that sort of thing, but
I barely saw it.
Do you know things like, did he tend to be an early riser? I hear that maybe he preferred to sleep a little later and then work into the hours of the night. But you don't know.
I can neither control nor possibly.
Right. I am in touch with Bonnie Holmes, his longtime secretary, and we had an interview scheduled and she became ill, but she sent me material, but I'm still going to take her to lunch soon and we're going to talk. And so she'd be a wonderful source.
Yeah.
I've had a brief exchange with Doretta Schlitt, and she shared some things very discreetly with me regarding the Pyramunda years, so that was helpful. You do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. She's still a beautiful woman, and I can imagine this blonde, blue-eyed, single, good-looking, fun-loving girl was quite attractive. She said she always had a policy, though. No fooling around with the balls. She didn't say she wasn't involved with Magnus, though. I don't know whether they were close friends, and that's none of my affair anyway.
Magnus, I wonder if he was surprised he couldn't win, but I've seen him more in Fort Bliss before the old lady.
Is that right, at Fort Bliss? That was, and he spoke English so well, that was one of the reasons he went down to meet the American advance guard, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so he must have spoken quite well, sufficient English for them.
I had only connected English. My school has educated for that much.
Is that right? And no English?
Yeah.
I took Latin in high school, which was even something of a rarity in my age. Is that right?
Well,
I think I had two years.
It all comes to the school system. It all kind of thing. You start with grade school with the class. Then you branch, certain branch off in several branch. Say, humanistic, which was my the foundation of all culture. Basic.
Sure.
There was the two directions in more science, more mathematics, foreign languages, living languages, only different languages.
Or the more classical.
The classical was my side.
Yes,
less math.
Nine years of Latin plus Greek. My wife's father went to a private school up in Bell Buckle, Tennessee, and studied ancient Greek and Latin. That was something of a rarity, I guess, in private schools.
Yeah.
And certainly a rarity nowadays, right? And that's too bad. I think we've lost something with less exposure to the classics in the original.
Much more than an understanding of where do we come from, how our language is structured. And it has helped me often with English studies.
Oh, I bet. And it helped me with English.
Germanic?
Yes.
And French. I think. These three,
it covers everything.
It covers all of them.
Right. Since English is such a hodgepodge language.
And come to think of it is the newest language among the European languages. When William the Conqueror went across the Channel, there was no English. That's right.
Oh, there was some Anglo, but primitive, kind of primitive tone.
There were Saxons.
Yes.
And Celts in Italy. And our English now is a mixture of the Saxons. And the Norman Dutch. Even the Normans originally were Germanic. They have picked up French.
I was going to say, Norway by way of France.
Yes. And the mixture of these two finally made English. 1100, 1200.
And I think even part of the Indo culture, the Near East, Indo.
Indo-Germanic,
that made its way
one
west.
One language group.
History? Yes, me too. I wish I could study more than I have. I did manage to minor in history in college, so that helped, along with journalism as a major. But I started off taking engineering at Auburn. I loved math and mechanical drawing, apparently I didn't love physics all that much, and I when I hit calculus, or the second level of calculus, I must have reached my maximum, because, and I was beginning to think then, maybe I should go into communications. Is that right?
Up to the black hole.
Mm-hmm. Well, it separated the men from the boys where I was concerned in engineering school. although even the little taste of engineering I got at Auburn has helped me observe the space program and earlier as a reporter for the paper doing space coverage. Well, let's see, I just don't want to neglect to ask you a question that might trigger something else, but, and some of this background is very, very interesting. Do you remember when, were you present when Dr. Von Braun came back the first time from a visit to Huntsville, Alabama, and I gather he had a briefing. I don't know whether it was for the whole team at Bliss or just some. And okay.
So that was the response for
me. All right. And was talking about it being so green here, and there were even these little mountains, and it was a pleasant.
Yeah.
Geographically, it was, you know.
This guy was our ship from Bliss, Devon, to here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rocks of the countryside here, if you don't look too close, it resembles the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
If you look closer, you see the place of the fur, it's here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, much closer.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to court.
Mm-hmm.
But that was shift from Bliss to here in Santa Fe.
That was so extreme.
I mean,
somebody said you had to drive 200 miles to see three trees together or something out there.
That would be a bit overdone before there were things in a cluster itself.
Sure.
Irrigated areas past some of all the was 90 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the loop mount or so into the mountains. So it also was deep in large and forest.
Oh, right.
Sure. Yeah, so from the front I think they had a big thing for nobody cares for it. It's just
rotting.
Rotten.
So that was a bit overdrawn, but still, it was a more verdant country in the desert, certainly.
But
how difficult or not was your adjustment to life, and I guess in the U.S. first, and then in Alabama secondly?
I see no big difference between El Paso of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, the culture was basically the same, I guess.
Yes, actually. Right. We had some concerns here. We heard so much about segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And we were quite relieved when it wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
At least as far as we could see.
Right. I guess.
Remember, we were first when you go up to the wall again. Just call the room to the old headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Boxer Club Mm-hmm. Black flag.
So that was early on.
Early on. That's what in 51 or so.
Mm-hmm.
52 maybe. So it got that bad.
You know, I was born and raised in the South, in Birmingham, an area of high black population. I lived in a little suburb where it was all, wasn't all white. You know, just around the corner was some black families who had their own homes.
Yeah.
There wasn't any socializing that went on in that case. In the rural parts, for the most cases, people looked at people as individuals. Or they may have looked down on blacks.
Yes.
Some people did. But they still could relate to each other as individuals. And,
yes.
And in some of the urban centers, you might even include Birmingham, but up north too, people didn't live near each other and they didn't get to know each other as individuals.
Yes.
So there's more tension, racial tension, I guess.
You see, my wife grew up in Chester.
Mm-hmm.
I remember she still told me about the black man who helped all the house. So, okay, he took his meal to the back steps.
Mm-hmm.
She said with him and told me. But he was at the same time a person they cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he died from cancer. The family friend physician took care of him. And most likely helped him die off.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I grew up in very modest, middle class family in Birmingham. My father was a newspaper man, and later he left the Birmingham Post. He was a business manager there. But he got out and started his own small business. But, we were just a middle-class family. But my father always provided a maid for my mother. And for the first 15 years of my life, she lived on our property. We had a servant's quarter in the back. A very small lot, but we had a quarter for her. And this was an indulgence my father gave my mother because she had grown up, I guess, used to that. And I grew so close to two of these maids over the years. They were like members of the family, and the white superiority mentality did not take with me. I mean, I didn't understand why the maid and I couldn't sit in the same part of the streetcar going to Birmingham because she was in my childlike innocence, I guess, she was a member of our family practically. So I grew up spared really harsh racial feelings. Now, realistically, I could always make a distinction. I mean, if a person is a rascal, whether he's black or white, you know, he's still a rascal. I didn't stereotype everyone just because of color, so it helped having colored people in the house.
Yes, at the seasons as process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that did help. Listen, I don't want to take up any more of your evening. This is going to be very useful.
Okay.
And, I get enough of these